Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions, usually washed down with three glasses of wine. But today, we're sticking with the soft stuff because my guest is a recovering alcoholic who's been sober for 8 years now. She first marched onto our screens alongside her partner in fashion crimes, Trini Woodall, 20 years ago, hosting the BBC's What Not to Wear, in which the pair were feared, revered and celebrated for their no-nonsense, tough-love approach to making women over and making them feel good about themselves. The show catapulted them to international fame, landing them slots on everything from the Oprah Winfrey Show to the Oscars red carpet. In 2007, ITV poached them, but their time on the channel was short-lived when their show Undress the Nation was met with a backlash over the amount of nudity it showed before the 9 o'clock watershed, prompting the duo to eventually go their separate ways. Whilst they remain firm friends to this day, it was a transition she found hard, hitting the bottle before eventually seeking help 8 years ago. Her father, an old Etonian, made a fortune in property and shipping, and having attended boarding schools, she started a working life as a Montessori teacher and then in the boutiques and fashion houses of London and New York before moving into journalism. In 1994, she met Trini at a party thrown by David Viscount Linley, Princess Margaret's son, who was her long-term boyfriend at the time. And with Trini, she began a fashion column some 2 years later for The Telegraph, which later morphed into What Not to Wear. Now 58, she remains happily married to Danish businessman Sten Bertelsen. And after 26 years, they have now got three children, Joe 22, Esme 19, and 17-year-old Cece. As well as writing novels, she now also hosts her own podcast, My Wardrobe Malfunction, in which she cleverly grills her celebrity guests on their relationship with their wardrobes and the many life events that sit around them. So let's dial her up. It's Susanna Constantine. Good morning, good morning, good morning. You vision of, well, loveliness. Look at that.
I tell you this, you've caught me on at a good moment because I've just been having my hair and makeup done because I'm doing a shoot. And normally I wouldn't have clean hair and I'd have no makeup on and I'd be in some kind of disgusting item that I've worn for about 5 days in a row. So you've hit the jackpot, Kate.
It's really good to see. And also, can I just commend you on the coordination of your crockery behind you? All beautifully coordinated colour-wise, just lovely.
Yeah, that is quite nice. Yeah, this is kind of the office. This is the hub centre of my home.
It's the nerve centre since we've all been in lockdown, because you, like I, have been incredibly busy podcasting. And I came on your podcast and shared all manner of embarrassments with you, which was really good fun.
No, you were amazing, Kate. And I mean, it's interesting. The podcast, My Wardrobe Malfunction. It's like, and I'm sure it's going to be the same with you, that, you know, you take an innocuous subject like clothes, and everyone has so many memories attached to items that they've worn. And I think people also are so relieved not to talk about the next fucking book that's coming out, or film or TV series, just to talk about something totally different for a change.
But what's smart about it is it's kind of, it's a device and a mechanism to unlock kind of really emotional gateways in terms of people's experiences, lives. It's them at their most vulnerable, at their most fabulous. So actually, it's quite symbolic in terms of where the conversation leads. And you've had some cracking guests. I mean, geez, Jane Seymour, Kristin Scott Thomas.
Kristin, she was amazing. You know, I turned up at her house, and I didn't know her at all. And I just contacted her through Instagram. And, you know, long, drawn-out sort of begging message. And
did you?
I got a kind of very shortcut one back saying, why not? And then I thought, oh, my God. And her reputation, like the characters she plays, is that she's quite frosty. Anyway, we turned up at her house, and clearly she'd forgotten that we were coming. And she looked like shit. And so she opened the door, she went, oh my God, I forgot. And I said, clearly, you look like you're wearing clothes that you've dragged out of your dog basket. And I thought, that could have gone one of either way. Anyway, she laughed, and she was amazing. She was so interesting and so lovely, and and has always been a bit of an icon of mine, so I was thrilled to meet her.
So you just literally slide into people's DMs on a wing and a prayer, sometimes cold calling.
Yeah, so I did the same with Daisy May Cooper.
Oh, isn't she great? She's been on ours as well.
God, I love her. And we've become good friends now. And she's amazing. And we just spent like 2 hours in hysterical laughter. And yeah, she's great.
What I love Instagram for is exactly what we've just been discussing, that ability to connect with people. And if they don't want to come back to you, that's totally fine. But sometimes you can make the most extraordinary connections, can't you?
No, it's amazing. And then when I went public about being an alcoholic, and I was so overwhelmed by messages from women in particular who were struggling. And that has been such a privilege for me to A, read their stories, and B, be able to help them. And every single person, when it comes to that, I will respond to and try and help in the best way I can, basically by sharing my own experience with alcohol. And that's been really rewarding. And I think it's a great tool in so many different ways.
You waited for a long time to publicly announce that you were sober, and that you'd completed, well, you're still a recovering alcoholic. You're never not a recovering alcoholic, are you? Is it something you wish you'd done sooner, or was the time just right for you then?
I didn't think about talking about it or not talking about it. I've always been very open with, you know, friends and people I work with, and been very open about it. And it was just, it kind of came up in a conversation on another podcast I did. And then, you know, it kind of hit the media a bit. And then I was reading all the statistics during lockdown about the high percentage of women who were you know, reaching out for help. And I thought, okay, now's the time, because there's so much shame attached to being an alcoholic and having a problem with booze. And so I thought, okay, now's the time to just try and alleviate some of that shame for women, and saying, you know, hello, I've been there, I know how you're feeling. And I think for women in particular, there are so many sort of tags attached to female drinkers.
It's interesting, because men, you're quite right, it's nuanced, it's almost unsaid, yeah. Possibly.
I don't think it's nuanced at all. I really don't. I think if you're a mother and you're an alcoholic, you're a bad mother. You know, that's what people are thinking.
Yeah.
And they might say it. And if you're, you know, you're single and then you're an easy lay, you know, as far as men concerns, that's how it's perceived. And whereas you quite rightly, you know, intimated with men, it's, yeah, you're one of the lads and, you know, pat on the back, have another beer. Whereas for a woman, it's totally different. And, you know, hence the overriding shame. And also, I do believe that female drinkers, and speaking for myself, you know, especially, is that we're, you know, we can function very effectively whilst hiding it. And that is exhausting. And it's very lonely. It's a very lonely place to be. So, yeah, there are a lot of high-functioning female alcoholics out there. But, you know, there is a solution. You've got to be ready yourself.
Did you do AA, can I ask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't go to rehab. I just, one day I walked into an AA meeting, and that was it. It was like coming home and listening to people's shares and, the identification and lack of judgment, and it was amazing. It was so freeing and liberating, and then to know that I could do something about it myself, I didn't have to rely on anybody else, that was a light bulb moment for me.
I think the lack of judgment must be really liberating, because you carry that secret for so long, don't you? And I think admitting to yourself that you have a problem is one thing, saying it out loud is another. And then just being able to kind of unravel and work through all of that in a group of confidence, really. It is a confidence, you know, it's a confidence that people should and pretty much do keep in AA.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, knowing that people understand you, because, you know, the drinking side of it is really just one of the symptoms of being an alcoholic. It is a mental disorder. And with that come a lot of isms.
Yeah.
And, you know, there can be anxiety, guilt, you know, your brain is always chattering to you. There are so many different things. And that's why, you know, we drink in the first place, is to try and shut those noises out in your head,
numb it and self-medicate. Yeah,
but you know, and everybody's different, Kate, as you're clearly very knowledgeable about it, which is fantastic. And you know, everybody is different. Everybody you know, there are some people who can drink two bottles a night of wine and they're absolutely fine, and there are some people who can drink, you know, drink half a bottle of night and they're not fine. And it is that point where you become powerless and you can't help yourself anymore. So you have to find someone else or something else, a higher power, something that's bigger than yourself to help you.
I wanted to talk about make or break scenarios. Can you think of a situation or a scenario that's been the making of you, and also of a time or a scenario that was the breaking of you?
Wow. I think the making of me was, or has been, walking into my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, because I'm now, and that was like sort of about 8 years ago. And I think now I am discovering, and it sounds such a cliche, but I'm discovering who I am. Not all of it is good at all. I'm learning my defects. You know, I can be a bit passive aggressive. I can be codependent. I can be a bit poor me, victim.
Really? That surprises me.
Yeah. That I definitely... I think that has been the making of me. And it's, you know, I'm not made by a long, long, long shot. You know, it's a work in progress. I am a work in progress. And I think the breaking of me, I don't think I've ever been totally broken.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been totally broken. I've never allowed myself to be totally broken. I'm quite, because my mother was severely bipolar, and, you know, with multiple suicide attempts. I learnt from a very young age to cope. So I've had this coping mechanism which has stood me in good stead, actually. It's made me very, very strong in a lot of ways. It's also, you know, damaging in other ways. But I think that's why I've never truly hit a breaking point. It's probably yet to come.
Well, none of us know that, do we? But it must have been almost heartbreaking at the time to go through that, especially as a child watching the person that you love make attempts on their lives or struggle with their day-to-day, being high one minute and low the next, as is quite common with bipolar.
Yeah, but for me, it's like, you know, a lot of children, you know, children are brilliant at adapting. And I think that's what I learned to do. Yes, the kind of anxiety every morning, waking up and thinking, how is she going to be today? But you normalise it. You know, you normalise it. You have to. And I didn't assume that other people's parents were the same. You know, I was quite isolated growing up as a child, so I didn't really know other people's parents. But I do remember going to stay with someone when I was about 15 with a school friend. And the mother waking me up in the morning with a cup of tea. And I remember being so moved and emotional by that someone, you know, someone's mother would do that. And it was such a lovely gesture. And I remember being incredibly moved by that.
Because it was so unlike your own experiences at home.
Yeah, and my mother was wonderful. You know, she really did do the best she could, and she was very loving, but she was, you know, she couldn't function. And it was, and I look back and I, you know, I wish, you know, she died quite a long time ago, and I wish I'd known then, you know, in hindsight, what I know now. Because she could have been helped far more effectively, because, you know, mental illness is something people are talking about now. But when, you know, my father was in denial about it, and she was just throwing pills and more pills and more pills. And, you know, that was it. She never once went into psychotherapy. It was just a catalogue of different medication, suicide attempts, into, you know, residential care, out. And she'd be all right for a bit, and then they'd change her medication. But you just learn to adapt. It's extraordinary. So I don't look back and think, oh God, you know, poor young, small Susanna. You know, I had the love of an amazing mother. You know, I had amazing love from her. And she was an incredible woman. She was totally unjudgmental, and she never felt she was better than anyone else. And I learned that from her, and that's a great gift. And that's something I try and instill into my own children. You know, never to think they're better than anyone else.
Did you worry about her because you were away at school? You were boarded, and that may be why you were boarded. I don't know, but that would, I'm thinking from your perspective as a child, not being there to see that she's okay or that she's not okay, would that create anxiety for you?
And I think you're absolutely right. I don't think I consciously worried about her. But I was incredibly homesick, and I hated boarding school, and I hated being separated from her. And I think subconsciously it was because I was like her watcher and her keeper. My sister's 6 years older than me, so she, you know, we didn't have the luxury of growing up together. We're now very, very close and very good friends. But at that time, so, you know, I was like the carer in a way for my mum. And I'm sure that's what brought on the homesickness and the anxiety.
Gosh, imagine if your mother was going through that in this day and age, how different the support and the help would be.
It would have been so different, Kate. And, you know, when she died, she was almost in a catatonic. Well, she wasn't a catatonic. She was catatonic. And, you know, it was a relief for her. You know, she was in so much pain. We could just see it etched all over her face, and had been in so much pain for the latter part of her life that, you know, it was a relief for her that she passed away.
Did she drink?
But I don't know. Yeah, she did, but then she stopped of her own accord. And I think for her it really was self-medication, because, you know, when she was depressed, And then she just stopped. She just stopped.
Gosh, that's a lot to get your head around. And you, I always find as well now that anything from our childhood, whilst you deal with that as a young adult, I think once you become a parent, you start viewing, reviewing almost your own situation as a child being parented with a very different lens. Did you find that when you had your own kids that you started to understand her better, empathise more?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And weirdly, I think I appreciated her. I kind of saw the positives much more than the negatives, because I went through phases of being angry, and I was never embarrassed or ashamed of her. I'd have friends to stay often, but I understood and learned to be grateful for what a good person she fundamentally was.
It's funny, isn't it? Love stories come in all different shapes and guises.
Mm.
Before we move on to our next question, can I just ask you if, you know, you talked about the making of you being going into that first AA meeting.
Mm.
Can you still remember what it was like to walk into that room, how it smelt, how you felt?
Absolutely.
That's interesting, isn't it? I think those moments are so massive in our minds.
Mm. It was. It really was. It was the first time I understood that I was doing this for myself. Mm. I wasn't doing it for anyone else, and I was doing it for myself. And I, you know, it was like I had to get well for myself in order to be the mother, the wife, the, you know, the career person that I wanted to be and wanted to get back to. And that was massive.
It's like standing at the foot of a mountain, isn't it? And thinking, right, how am I going to get up there?
Mm, exactly.
But congratulations, 8 years
Thank
on.
Thank you.
Still
Thank
nailing
you.
It.
One day at a time, as they say.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, my next question kind of harks back to something we touched upon when I spoke with you on your podcast. And it was about identity. And you kind of touched on that just now in terms of how you had to rebuild yourself as a mother, as a wife, as a career woman. And actually, we spoke about how damaging it is sometimes that our work persona becomes our identity. And it creeps in and it happens not overnight. It becomes who you are. And then suddenly when that work rug is pulled from under your feet, and you and I have both been through that, mm-hmm, where we have to... Mm-hmm. You go, oh my God, who actually am I? And I think a lot of people coming through this pandemic, as we start to slowly unlock, are going to start to re-identify who they are, what they want from life. So I just thought you've got a whole toolkit there that you could probably share with people around that. And I'd love to know how you did it, because I've done it for myself. It's not easy, but it's really, really worth it when you get to the other end of it and go, I'm Kate, first and foremost. and this is what I do for a living. But there's loads of other things in between those two sentences, mm-hmm. Those two titles, if you like.
Mm-hmm. I don't really know who I am yet.
No,
and I think it's, I think we have, as people, we evolve all the time. And I think it's, I mean, of course, on the surface, I know who I am and I know what my, you know, bad sides are and my good sides are and all of that. But I think it's kind of, you know, it's like the world is so small now and everyone's traveled everywhere. But the last frontier is the, you know, human beings. It's like, who are people? And I think we've really lost sight of that. And that's why actually Ben Fogle's show, when he goes and lives with you know, people who've gone off the grid, I've only watched a few of them, but I find that so interesting because that is, yes, they live off the grid, but what's more going off piste, as you like, is meeting these characters. And I see myself in the same way. I'm continually pushing myself to find out who I am and how far I can push myself physically, mentally, emotionally. And yeah, you know, like I say, on the surface, I know I'm, you know, a wife and a mother of three children, and I can write and I can communicate with people. I know that I'm quite lazy, but I'm also ambitious, but I don't really want to have to work that hard to get to it. So yeah, I really don't know, you know, I don't know deep who I am on a deep level. And I think, you know, that's something I've got to try and discover.
But surely what we are is entirely informed by our experiences through life, and we continue to experience, so we continue to inform our identity. You know, an experience will shape or break us, even though you've never had quite the experience of feeling broken. You talked about, you know, when you and Trini went your separate ways, you stopped being Trini and Susanna. And it was like, oh, how do I become Susanna again? And you had to learn to stand away from work and be who you are and like who you are. Was that easy?
No, it was incredibly difficult. And that's, I think that is probably why I'm still, you know, on a journey of discovery. I mean, you know, to be honest, I'm not really that interested in who I am. Trini and I would work together for 15 years, 17 years, and that is a long time. And when we started working together, we were in our kind of late 20s, early 30s. And so we hadn't kind of really, yeah, we'd grown up to a certain degree, but we hadn't. So I, you know, I've had to start again as a solo person. And so I don't have the luxury of many years under my belt. You know, I think I identify, I mean, if I could put a, not a label on myself, but, you know, give myself a heading, it would be someone who is kind of low maintenance and likes a low maintenance lifestyle. You know, I don't like all the frills and the lights and the, you know, everything that came with what Trini and I were doing.
Mm.
And I look back and I think, my God, how on earth did I manage to do that? Because that's fundamentally, I think, not who I am. The person who I am, going to answer your question now finally, is the person who loves nature, who goes, you know, wild and cold water swimming, the person who will push herself physically, the person who wants to be beautiful on the inside. And I don't mean that in a kind of, you know, stick my finger down my throat because I'm a good person. If a doctor opened me up, would want him to look at my organs and go, oh my God, that's just so clean and perfect. You know, that's what I want. I want to be really young on the inside. I want my body to feel young and be young on the inside. And how I look on the outside, you know, there's nothing I can do about that. And so I just sort of accept it, really.
I completely identify with what you're saying there, because actually, I think certainly when you've had the experiences you have, with the lights, the camera, the action, and being so high profile and so well known for so long. Actually, you sort of rail against that once you've had your fill of it. And maybe that was right for them, but the wild water swimming and the nature loving, and this is right for you right now. Would that have been right for you back then, do you think?
Probably not. There's, you know, I think anyone who works in the public eye, you know, on television or whatever, I think there is a big part of us that is a bit narcissistic, a bit mm-hmm. of a show off, a bit of a bullshit artist. And I think, you know, there is still that in me. You know, I am a bit of a show off. I like to be the centre of attention. You know, I'll walk into, if I meet someone new, I'll make damn sure they're going to remember who I am by, you know, saying something outrageous, or, you know, I don't have much of a filter. You know, I speak my mind, and that hasn't changed. So, yeah, no, I think I don't regret anything I've done. I've been so lucky, and I did love every minute of it, and I loved working with Trini and worked with some amazing women and contributors and crews, and been to incredible countries and made friends, long-lasting friends. And that has been fantastic. And that, you know, those friendships that I made in Israel, in Scandinavia, in India, they're there, and they will be there always. And that's a real privilege.
You girls, you worked fast and hard and everywhere. I mean, it was like a pop band that exploded. You became international. I jumped on a flight with you to New York once. We were going to Elton John's 60th birthday party. I was the host, you were a guest. And you girls, you're like, your passports were, you know, the size of a sort of small bedside Bible. You were such proficient flyers. I was pregnant. You were like, right, you need to get these socks on, otherwise you could die midair. We're professionals. We know what we're doing. Now go to the bar and have a bloody drink. And you were living a hard, fast life. Maybe those moments aren't meant to last forever. Maybe it's just you gorge on it and then you go, that's enough now.
That's right. And I think it's recognizing that and being at peace with that. And, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to turn the volume down. And, you know, it just takes time. And, you know, it's peace and tranquility now rather than the fast living. I do miss it. You know, I miss getting on an aeroplane, and I do miss working with a group of people to create something as a team. I miss that, the kind of, you know, TV families, and I miss that a lot. But at the same time, you know, if it's meant to be, some of that will come back again, and maybe in a different way. I don't know. I'm still searching.
Yeah. Yeah. And you say, you know, it's sometimes it's difficult to turn the volume down. You know, I think I can only speak from my own experience. It's only ego that gets in the way of that. Sometimes you wanted to lower the volume. It's just your ego wouldn't allow mm-hmm. you to, because it looked like a step back or a step down. And actually, success is how you define success. It's not how somebody else would measure it for you. And I think once you work through those, that difficult mathematical equation of, my success is what I decide, not what somebody else decides for me.
Yeah.
Then you're on a much healthier path then to working out the next step of who you are. It's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
is.
Complicated old souls.
Yeah, but that's so interesting. I haven't heard it put like that, and you're quite right. It is. You've got to decide on your own success and level, and if you're comfortable about it, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. Because you spend so much time pleasing other people. And I think as we get older, we have the luxury of beginning to please ourselves.
It's trying to conform to other people's ideas of success.
Yeah, yeah.
And always trying to stay doing that one thing. And actually, you know, I don't want to eat the same food every day. So why would I want to do the same job every day?
Mm.
And actually, do I want to do that for 20 years? Am I might not, you know? Mm. And I don't think our children will have that weight of expectation that they carry around their professional identities, because they'll be more than prepared, I hope, going into the working world to expect that there'll be lots of iterations of who they are professionally. Technology just, I mean, look, when we both started out, when we were sat on that plane going to Elton 60th, You know, social media didn't exist. It's changed everything in terms of the way we work.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. Look at us now.
I think all of us have great teachers in our back catalogue, and I want to know, who have been your greatest teachers?
So many people, Kate. Princess Margaret was one.
You were very close with her, weren't you?
Yeah, and I went out with her son David for many years, and I was very close with her. And when my mum was at her peak of, you know, her illness reached its kind of height, she very much became a sort of mother figure. I was almost like kind of her Pygmalion, and I was very close to her, and she taught, I can't kind of think of anything that she specifically taught me, but she taught me how to kind of conduct myself, I think, and how to not really care about what other people think, which is of huge value. She was an amazing woman, and I really miss her, and I loved her dearly, and she taught me to be completely open, and she was someone who I could absolutely pour my heart out to and speak my mind. And you know, she's been so misunderstood, and of course she could be, you know, she had her reputation of being difficult, which she could be, but if she realized that you were someone who didn't want anything from her or wasn't hoping to gain by an association with her, she was an incredibly loyal, warm, loving, brilliant, smart, highly intelligent, funny woman. So she's definitely someone who I feel so blessed to have had in my life.
Isn't it interesting as well, the thing that she taught you there, you said, was to be open, and yet this is from a woman who spent her entire life having to be remarkably closed off.
Yes and no. I think when you know, it's like growing up in a zoo, being in that environment, and you've got people pressed up, their noses pressed up to the glass. You know, it's like being a silverback gorilla. You've got people with their noses pressed up against the window. So you learn to ignore it. You learn to just get on with your life because you have no other option. So, you know, she was truly herself, I think, at all times. And I've had huge respect for that.
If you wanted to just speak with Margaret, did you just call her? Could you just drop in? Was it, you know, how does that work?
Well, I was kind of, you know, I spent a lot of time with them, and I would ring or turn up, or, you know, it was the same as any other family, really. I didn't really think about who she was. She was just my boyfriend's mum.
Yeah, that's lovely. Who else has shaped, informed and educated?
I think probably my husband, Steen, and also my children. I've learned so much from my children. But I think my husband, he's someone who has a thirst for knowledge. He's someone who will, I don't always like to get his opinion because I know I'll get the brutal truth. And more often than not, it won't be what I want to hear. And I'm still trying to get my head around that one.
Do you understand the irony, though, of the fact that you are famous for straight talking, no nonsense advice giving?
I know. But it's like, you don't, you know, the people you love the most are the hardest to communicate with sometimes. And, but he's next. He's, what he's taught me more than anything is about family. And growing up, because my family was quite dysfunctional, I wanted to get away from my family as quickly and as fast as I possibly could. I was out that door, you know, at the age of 16. And, I didn't really put any value on them, you know, but my friends became my family. I sought my family. So when I was, you know, in my friends, they kind of fitted into two categories. I either had the naughty children who I could be naughty with, or I had the sort of parental, slightly more sensible friends. And so, if you like, Princess Margaret was the mother. And then Steen, you know, he comes from a very close family, and I love his father, sadly died, but I was very, very close to his parents and to his brothers. And I've learned to appreciate that family is the most important thing, whereas I never understood that. I thought family was the people, they were the people you had to cast off and shed. I absolutely, to my core, believe that. And he's taught me the importance of family.
Actually, now that you put it like that, and I understand your own experience of childhood, that makes complete sense. Mm. But to hear that as somebody that has not grown up, like Steen, I've grown up with a phenomenal family setup. So I know what family should be, because I feel like I've been blessed to have that. If you haven't, that gives you no tools to kind of parent, be in a relationship. Actually, that family unit and what you're taught with that is so important in terms of setting you out in life. If you don't have that. But how funny that you tried to run from your own family looking for some sort of normal family structure, and you run straight into the royal family.
I mean, yeah. But you know, they were, as individuals, forget their relationships with each other, individually, you know, amazingly well-informed, interesting people. But, yeah, you know, Steen's family were just the best. And weirdly, I worked for his father for 4 years before I met Steen.
And, no.
Because he backed John Galliano when he came fresh out of St. Martin's. And he backed him, and he backed Alistair Blair and Richard James, menswear designer, Patrick Cox, shoe designer. So I worked for him. So I knew both Steen's parents really well before I met Steen. And then I met Steen independently, and we started talking. And I was like, oh my God, is your father Peter? And he went, yeah. I went, what are the chances? You know, it was like, what are the chances of that? So I married Steen, but I also married his family. And I, you know, I
love lovely.
Them to bits. Yeah.
How did you meet Steen?
We met at a party. It was cliche, eyes met, that was it. Love at first sight.
Really? Yeah. Instant.
Instant. Totally instant, yeah. And 26 years later,
God,
we're still here, clinging on.
Hardly clinging. I mean, you're very happy together by all accounts, I hope. Mm-hmm. 26 years in. Does he continue to teach you?
Yeah, he does. Absolutely. But I have to learn to listen more. You know, I have to learn to listen. And I trust his opinion 100%. He again, is incredibly smart, and he's an old soul, which I don't consider myself to be at all. I consider myself to be brand spanking new. And he's an old soul, and I love his deep wisdom. You know, I'm still getting to know him after 26 years. I'm still, he's such a
making me want to cry.
No, but he is an extraordinary person. He is, and he's kind of annoyingly good at everything, which I think is one of the reasons I do my cold water swimming, is that he can't even get into a heated swimming pool. It's the one thing I can do that he can't.
Do you know, that's the possibly some of the most romantic lines I've ever heard attributed from one partner to another. The fact that you remain enthralled by him after, and you know, the fact that you locked eyes and that was it. Mm. I've never had that experience. I really hope that before I pop my clogs, I do. It sounds magical.
No, it is. I mean, it's not easy. Christ, there are times when I want to fucking kill him or run away. But, you know, generally, you know, that's, I think, what keeps us together. And also, it's kind of, I do believe, and I'm not good at this, and I need to become, you know, I want to become better. It's actually wanting to understand someone, wanting to discover them, wanting to know what makes them tick and what makes them think. And that you have to reapproach constantly, because we're all changing so much. And, you know, you get married, that changes you. You have children, you know, we change all the time. So you've got to get to know people. And then when your kids leave, we've changed again. You know, when you get married, you sow the garden, you sow the seeds, and then that needs to be pruned and clipped, and then maybe you throw a few more plants in and maybe some of them die. And so it does need constant tending. And, you know, I want to be better at that. And I think that is very important. And that's what I believe keeps a relationship going.
Well, you know, of all the things I expected to hear from you, it wasn't that kind of lovely, romantic breakdown of your marriage. Because you're such... Normally, you just riff and joke and you know, bluster and your comedy. I've never heard you speak so beautifully like that. That's really nice.
Well, you bring that out in me, Kate.
Ah, well, make sure Steen hears this.
Fine job. I want to. It's like it's very, very difficult not to be open with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed that, and you're amazing. And yeah, see you soon. I hope.
I really hope so. Lots of love. As always, the show is produced by me, Kate Thornton, alongside Richard Hatherall for Yahoo UK. Editing and co-producing comes from Callum Goddard Mucklow, and our music is provided by Andy Bell. His back catalogue is available on iTunes and Spotify. We'll be back next week with more great guests and chat. Now, we didn't drink in this episode, but if you are enjoying a glass of wine whilst you're listening to us, please try to do as we always try to do and drink responsibly. That was a mouthful, wasn't it?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.